What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
We have a mystery to solve here at the radio station, because I arrived here and noticed in our little lobby area when we walk into the station, there was a package of Halloween-themed peeps on the table. And I'm like 95% sure that it was unopened when I got here, and now there's a peep missing. It's not really a mystery in the way of like who ate the peep, but I am curious to find out who it was, because I'm somebody who, like, I thought peeps were... We're good as a kid. I don't like him anymore. And so I'm curious who was the one who was the brave soul that actually ate the peep. We have since learned that Boehm ate one of the peeps. He just ate one during that break. Mackenzie says they're absolutely disgusting. I'm now curious. We texted Jax. Jax said no. So that leaves either JP or Nick, who left the afternoon show as the culprits who ate the peep. JP doesn't really strike me as a peep guy. I don't know. Nick maybe could be a peep guy. Might have to ask him tomorrow. Let's go out to our guest, Daryl Ryder, our Browns beat reporter, brought to you by Scheibman Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl, I know you didn't eat the peep. Are you a peep guy? Would you ever eat a peep?
No.
Yeah, I'm with you. They're disgusting.
Can't do the peeps. That is maybe the one candy on earth that I will not consume.
So I do like candy corn, which is also very taboo.
I love candy corn.
Thank you.
Daryl's and I love the side. Candy corn pumpkins,
those,
too.
Oh, yeah. Those ones are actually better than the regular candy corns. You're right about that. It's kind of like how the shape Reese's cups, like the pumpkins and the Christmas trees and all that, those taste different than the regular Reese's cups.
Yes.
Yeah, the pumpkins taste better. I agree.
Mm. Yeah, my money's on Nick.
I think so too. I think it was Nick. I'm gonna have to.
He's getting the diabetes.
I can't wait to unravel this further and find out who it was. But my guess is Nick too.
Well,
I just can't see JP eating a peep. I just can't.
Well, here's the thing. There's a security camera up there.
That's true.
Somebody's got the footage.
Who's got access? Keith? Can we text Keith? Hey, pull it up, Keith.
I do believe now Keith has permitted access to the security cameras.
Instead of posting something from the show of me sitting here at the in-studio, just post that as our clip for tonight. Just be like, here's Nick Wilson eating a peep. Thoughts, everybody?
Gotta out the peep eater. That almost came out the wrong way. I had to be very careful as I said that.
Yeah, that's when I knew I was going to ask you about peeps, I initially wrote down, are you a peep guy, Daryl? And I was like, that's not how I want to word that question.
Yeah, that's no. There will be no peeping Tom jokes being made here tonight, okay?
Oh, man, I love this.
But no, I'm
serious.
Get your hands on the security footage.
I will work on that because we need to find out who it was.
That's what needs to happen. We need a full-fledged 92.3 The Fan investigation. Who ate the peeps?
This conversation will likely continue tomorrow when I'm in with Nick on the afternoon show, if it was him.
What poor soul is ruining plumbing right now?
Your poor plumber, your poor doctor, just everyone. Oh, man. Daryl Ryder joining us here on the show. Daryl, how much does the result this coming Sunday against the Chargers, you think, determine what direction the Browns go moving forward in the 2024 season?
Well, I mean, I think it'll play a part, but I don't think it's going to dramatically alter Andrew Berry's way of thinking. I mean, I certainly respect the optimism that we heard on Monday from Juan Thornhill that, the playoffs are alive and well and all that kind of stuff. I don't necessarily believe that, but because they basically have to do what they've never done before, and that's like win 5, 6, 7, 8 games in a row. And the longest winning streak for this franchise since 1999 is 4 games. That's it. 4 in a row. They have lost plenty of games in bulk, but the win streaks escaped them. I just pulled up my spreadsheet right now. Tell me how many times the Cleveland Browns since 1999 have won four games in a row. And I'm going to give you a hint. Their first four-game win streak did not happen until 2009.
I'm going to say it happened two times.
Close. Add three and you'd have the correct answer. It has happened five times.
I definitely lowballed him. Yeah, I had very little hope that it was more than two.
Well, we know you're Mr. Negativity when it comes to the Browns, so it's understandable. Now, how many times have they won three in a row since 1999? And your hint is the first three-game win streak came in 2001.
I'm going to say nine times.
You nailed it. Right on the money.
Look at
me. There you go. Look at you.
I absolved
something
myself.
Something tells me you hurried up and Googled that.
No, Daryl, I swear we can pull up the security footage again. I did not Google that answer. I don't even know if that answer would come. Like, I think it might take a while to find. You got to do some digging on that one. I don't know if Google just has that one on hand. Plus, sometimes those AI answers aren't actually correct. So
how about this? They've lost four games in a row six times. They've lost five games in a row five times. They've lost six games in a row three times. Seven games in a row five times, I'm sorry. They also have a nine-game losing streak, a 14-game losing streak.
A 16-game
losing
streak.
A 16-game losing streak.
Not great. No. Yeah.
Ain't football in Cleveland fun?
It's been a lot more fun the last couple of years, but yeah.
Well, I gotta say, you know, that needs to be the new slogan for the Haslams when they move into their new digs and make football in Cleveland fun again.
Well, that's been my whole thing with the Deshaun part of this. Like, they gotta hope that contract, because right now the voided year is going to 2028. They gotta make sure they leave that thing in 2028. They cannot possibly have that thing linger into 2029. That would be a disaster.
Well, they're gonna avoid that sucker in 2026 and take the bullet.
I would assume so too.
That's what they're gonna do.
So Daryl, as we talk about what kind of lies ahead for this team after this game, and we know the trade deadline's 2 days later than the bye week, and where their heads will kind of be at, is there a way where maybe they sort of try to thread the needle? And what I mean by that is stay competitive. Maybe you keep Jameis Winston around because he's this quarterback that's sort of leading the charge here and has made the offense look better. But you still find some pieces and parts to move without completely, you know, like throwing in the towel in 2024.
Well, they're not going to trade Myles Garrett, right?
Yeah.
At least we hope. Because if they do, I will be leading the calls for somebody to lose their job. You don't trade generational talent like that. And have you seen what the Browns do with first round draft picks? You can give me all the first round draft picks in the world. I'm not interested. Okay. I see what the Browns do with first round draft picks. Sorry, not impressed. I'm not trading Miles, but you know, guys like Za'Darius and Elijah Moore, you know, these players that are on these last years of their contract that are not in your long-term planning, I'm all for jettisoning. I don't believe that they're going to rally back and make the playoffs this year. That just isn't going to happen. I believe not many teams have rallied from a 2-6 start to a season to go ahead and make the playoffs. In fact, this is from Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports. 1970 Bengals, 2020 Commanders, 2022 Jaguars. They're the only 2-6 teams ever to make the playoffs.
Wow.
So, better chance of winning the lottery, I think, than at this point than you know, the Browns getting out. Because here's the thing. Like, let's have an honest discussion about Jameis Winston here, right? Yes, he made the offense palatable, okay?
Which wasn't hard, given how bad it was.
Right. The bar is low, right? We did, just ask him for some mediocre quarterback play. He did throw for 300 yards, give him credit. He should have thrown two, three, maybe four interceptions in that game. Thankfully, the Baltimore Ravens secondary can't catch football.
Shout out Jim Donovan for the assist.
Yes, you know, but like, The Jameis Winston experience is that he's going to throw a lot of touchdowns and he's going to throw a lot of interceptions, right? They're going to, I think, win a couple of games here, but I just they're not going to have this monumental rally where they're going to win, what, 8 of 9 that they have remaining?
Yeah.
You know, that just isn't going to happen. Or win 7 of 9. I don't see that happening. The competition is too difficult. So, you know, just make this thing fun for fans to watch the rest of the way. You're going to get your first round pick back next year. And then, you know, maybe Andrew Berry can collect some extra mid round picks that he can turn into maybe another second round pick or something like that, right? Because they do need an infusion of young talent. This is an older football team. This is a very expensive football team. They've got salary cap limitations that they have to think about. Thank you to Deshaun Watson. And so they're going to have to find a way to field a winning team, but do it cheaper from a salary cap standpoint. And that obviously begins next year. But, you know, as far as this year goes, yeah, I mean, any spare parts that Andrew Berry can turn into draft picks not named Jameis Winston, go ahead. The reason I say not Jameis is because, well, if he does play well here, do you want another Joe Flacco situation where you got rid of a perfectly good quarterback, right?
So you, I was going to actually ask that next. You could see a scenario where maybe they actually bring Jameis back next year.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, there are terms and conditions here,
right,
attached to that. But yeah, I mean, if he goes out and he plays like Joe Flacco did, right, where he's got a bunch of 300-yard games, they're able to win some games, you know, the offense is moving along, and then yeah, I definitely could see that scenario where you bring him back as a bridge quarterback until, I don't know, I guess we wait another 30 years for them to find a franchise quarterback, because, well, we're still waiting. We thought it was Baker. It's not Baker. Thought it might be Deshaun. It's not Deshaun. So, you know. Someone in the building got drunk and thought it was Johnny Manziel or the homeless guy. Jimmy ran into the homeless guy or whatever the Johnny legend Manziel is, right? you know, so the Haslams are 0-for picking the franchise quarterback. I think we can all agree on that. So, yeah, if Jameis can play really well here, then I think you have to consider keeping him around to be the bridge quarterback and at least, like I said, put an entertaining product out there for the fans, even if you can't win.
Some final thoughts with our Browns beat reporter, Dale Ryder. You mentioned being an older team, but a guy that's younger that I thought played really well on Sunday, even in the rewatch, I thought he did a good job, was DeJuan Jones. Sounds like he maybe took the 2 weeks he sort of spent out of the lineup, gave him a chance to kind of get his weight in check a little bit and let his knee heal up a little bit more. Is it viable, you think, that he could end up being now the left tackle of the future, especially given all the uncertainty around Jedrick Wills?
Absolutely. Look, I believe DeJuan Jones has the talent to be an all-pro, okay? We saw that last year.
Yeah.
Okay? So I believe in his talent. My criticism of him was basically him not living up to the talent that I believe he has. I thought he played really well. Was he perfect? No, couple mistakes, but I on those mistakes, I'm not sure what the assignment was, so I hesitate to criticize him, but at least he wasn't standing around like we saw earlier in the season watching two guys run by him, right? He'd look to his left, look to his right, see two guys coming at him and choose option three, which is to block none of them. That didn't happen last week.
Yeah.
So I thought he was really good. And honestly, I would stick with this offensive line combination going forward.
He's Dale Ryder, our Browns insider here at 92.3 The Fan. Always grateful for his time. Daryl, I will see you in Berea tomorrow. You have a great rest of your night, all right?
I appreciate the warning, and check that security camera footage.
We will. Yeah, let's all watch the Yankees lose tonight so we can enjoy some New York
too.
Fan tears. That's always a fun thing.
Yes, a little schadenfreude. Hey, listen, the Yankees, the Giants, and the Knicks all lost on the same night. Let me tell you, New York sports Twitter was glorious last night. Phenomenal.
It was the best. You're right about that. Appreciate you, Daryl. We'll talk tomorrow. Welcome back in. Spencer Sherman with you. Oh, it's a good night. It's a good night when the Yankees are on the brink of being swept in the World Series. We'll come back to it. We do have Lance Risland Cleveland.com, said to join us in about 40 minutes. We'll get back to the Browns with him coming up. What did he see from Jameis Winston? What did he see from the offense? What did he see from DeJuan Jones and much, much more? We'll get his thoughts on it. But before we get back to that, the Cavaliers are off to a 4-0 start for the first time since the year after they won a championship, the 2016-17 season, which there's an argument to be made that that team was actually even better than the one that won the title in 2016, which is, you know, kind of interesting in its own right. But regardless, team's off to a great start. And one of the players who is certainly coming into his own and playing some really good basketball is Darius Garland. Now, there have been some spirited debates centered around Garland, his status with the team, his future with the team, whether or not he's a viable player and can play alongside Donovan Mitchell and all these different things over the last couple of years. And the last two games, you have seen the Darius Garland, rather, that was an all-star a couple years ago. He had 34 points last night. His assists are down a little bit. He only had 3 last night and then 5 in the game on Saturday against Washington to go along with 23 points. But, I mean, 4 of 5 from 3 and then 5 of 8 from 3 last night. Like, he's been super efficient. He's making his shots. He's hitting from 3. This is the guy that we were expecting him to be. Like, this is the player that a couple years ago we felt like he could become and turn into. And Donovan Mitchell wanted to make sure that everybody was aware just how good he's been. This is what he had to say about Darius Garland after the win last night.
I just want everybody who was on that side to stay on that side when it comes to him. Like, you know what I mean? I don't want it to be a switch up. You know what I mean? And I think he said the same thing during an interview or something like that. Like, this is who he is. And, you know, there are times throughout your career where you have years like that. And obviously he was going through things personally and different things. You have to figure out, you know, you have to grow and figure out, okay, like, there's going to be things that happen. How do I continue to build? And it was tough. He's in the lineup, out the lineup. So for him, you know, I think this was more of a summer where it's like, okay, I'm starting to figure these things out and just be who you are. Just be confident. We've been preaching that to him, you know, since I got here, and that's who he is. That's who he was when he was drafted. You know, he was an all-star, and he was just playing at this level. But the biggest thing for me is, like, he's playing. His defensive effort is the biggest thing. Like, 34 points, yeah, like, he does that. I'm not really tripping on that, but, like, being able to slide your feet, get into the spots, be there, like, those are the things that we all, like, feed off of. And he's been phenomenal. He's going to keep being that guy, but I definitely want to continue. And I know it's only 4 games into the season, but he's going to keep playing like this. And I would like everybody who said he couldn't to stay over there. And I know who a lot of y'all are and who wasn't on that side, you know, keep over here, you know what I mean?
Donovan Mitchell keeping the receipts on who said he couldn't play anymore and who said he couldn't. I want to let the record show. Like, I think there have been some legitimate questions about whether or not him and Donovan Mitchell fit together. I think if you've ever made that point, I think it's a viable one. You look around the league, there's not a lot of teams running with undersized guards, that are chasing championships and getting to that level in the NBA playoffs. It's just not really a thing you see. With how important wing players are these days and guys like Jason Tatum running the league, like, it's a hard place to get to when you have 2 undersized guards out there on the perimeter. There are some legitimate questions there about fit, and that might be the thing that eventually leads to having to split these two up at some point. And I have talked about that ad nauseum with many of you, and just in general, it's been a topic of conversation about this team for a couple years. But I want to be clear, like, I was never of the belief that Darius Garland was just a trash player now. I brought up the fact that several years ago, Steph Curry gave some of the highest praise you could to a young point guard in saying, I think, something along the lines of, like, he's the future of this league. And, like, he's, like, the next great point guard. And the fact that he was an all-star not so long ago. And so you have a guy here who was already on the rise and was going to continue to be. And has he taken some steps backwards in the last couple of years? Sure. But I think it was important to remember the context of that. There were injuries that played a role. Most notably last year, he breaks his jaw, spends more than a month with it wired shut, eating his food everything's a milkshake for him. Where he's drinking it all with a straw to get the nutrients that he needs. He drops a bunch of weight, drops a bunch of pounds, and then he has to come back mid-season and try to still play at like a high level, get acclimated to what JB Bickerstaff was trying to do with a different style of offense, and it just never really came to fruition for him, unfortunately. But even with all that, I never thought that he was just some garbage player that wasn't going to realize his full potential, because we all remembered, we should have all remembered, how good he was the year that he was an All-Star. Like, he's a good player. He has been a solid player that was a rising star in this league. And what's crazy is, like, the year he was an All-Star, in 2021-22, he averaged 21.7 points, 8.6 assists, and 2.7 rebounds. And then the first year of Donovan Mitchell, his numbers didn't drop all that much. He averaged 0.1 less points. He dropped his assists by like 0.8? And his rebounds by like 0.6. Like, his numbers were still pretty comparable that year, even though he had to kind of take a back seat. Even though that was where the conversation about like fit sort of came into play. But it has been awesome to see how a new coach with a vision like JB Bickerstaff, like Kenny Atkinson has, with the offensive prowess and the offensive mind that Kenny Atkinson has, get the most out of Garland in a way that we haven't seen in a couple years now. That is encouraging, that is important, and it does sort of open you up to, okay, can this now work? It at least makes it a possibility where, you know, I'm willing to see this thing through and try this thing out to see if they can make a two undersized guards sort of fit together, play off of each other well, and that's kind of been the story, I think, through these first four games. Has just been how Kenny Atkinson has unlocked some different things in this offense, whether it be Garland, whether it be what he's doing with Mobley, handling the ball a little bit more and sort of facilitating the offense while also getting him to be more aggressive and attacking more. Like, all these things are what we were hoping JB Bickerstaff was going to try to tap into last year, but he just never did. And to see it all kind of playing out this year is a good thing. And so I have been as critical as anybody when it comes to this team not making any changes. Like, at some point, you just gotta like, okay, we gotta try to play keeping up with the Joneses, because the team like the Knicks got so much better, and you just beat them last night. It's early in the season. I think the Knicks are still figuring a lot of things out, and that's probably pretty reasonable to assume. So I'm not like hanging my hat on that one alone. It was the first real test of the season, because the early portion of the schedule was pretty light, if we're being honest. I mean, you play the Raptors, you play the Pistons, you play Washington. So that was your first real test. You get your second real test on Wednesday with LeBron and Bronny coming to town. But tomorrow. But like, yeah, I am fascinated to see how this thing works and give it a chance. And even though I was critical of saying this team needed to do more, there is something to be said for getting a new coach that has a new sort of vision and the way he wants to do things specifically with the offense. And if he can get what he's gotten out of these guys to start the season, and that becomes a consistent thing where they're not playing more than like 31 to 32 minutes, 30 to 32 minutes, maybe 28 in some instances. So they're not getting like worn down by the regular season, and you're sort of managing them that way. And then on any given night, Garland can go off. Donovan can go off. Mobley can go off. Like, it gives me confidence that come a playoff series, a lot of these guys will be equipped to sort of take over a game, and they'll be playing so in sync. Like, yeah, did I want them to do some things differently, change up the roster a little bit? Of course. I think many of us did. But the Cavs are sort of investing in a plan here that Atkinson can do more than what JB Bickerstaff did with the current group of guys, which gives you the opportunity to not have to part with them quite yet, or part with anybody quite yet. And you might have to do that at some point. And so if that happens, okay, we see where things fall from there. But you kind of have a window here up until the trade deadline where you can see how this thing's going to work and see if they can play consistently with each other and then decide whether or not you have to shake things up at that point. And it might even come later. Like, maybe you'll see this season all the way through and then you'll try to shake some things up come the next offseason. But this is what I was the most excited about when I understood they weren't going to make any major changes, was the idea that Kenny Atkinson was going to try some different things and that in theory he was going to be able to get more out of certain players. And I do think as things stand right now, we are seeing that in real time. And Garland is one of the biggest beneficiaries of the new system and the new scheme. 216-474-0092. Is Darius Garland rounding back into his all-star form? And how do you feel about the early returns of his game, but also the Cavaliers' offense at this point in the season? We'll talk some more about the Cavs when we get back. Big game against the Lakers tomorrow over at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. LeBron back in town. It's your next big sort of test on the schedule here. We also got Lance Reisland, Cleveland.com, who's going to join us in a little over 20 minutes from now. We got our eye on the World Series, keeping tabs on whether or not the Yankees are going to lose and we can laugh at their expense. It's Spencer German with you, filling in for JP, Overtime with Jonathan Peterlin, 92 through the Fan. All right, I was going to talk more Cavs, but we got to talk about what just happened in this World Series game. I was planning on bringing this up earlier or bringing this up later in the show. I mean, I can still circle back to it in the way that I wanted to later. So I guess I'll save that part of the conversation for later. But there was a foul ball in the bottom of the first that Mookie Betts goes up into the stands and grabs. And I kid you not, a Yankees fan grabs his glove as he's holding onto the ball and is just holding onto his glove for dear life, trying to pry it open and get the ball out of his glove. And as he does that, Mookie like jumps with his other hand, and the guy sitting next to him grabs his other hand. So now Mookie's like being held by both his arms up in the stands. They pop the ball out to try to make it be a foul ball. And luckily the umpires run over and they know he caught it. They say he's out. And that's that. And I'm pretty sure the fan got escorted out of the game. First of all, this Yankees fan looked like when somebody says, what do you think of when you hear a Yankees fan? This guy looked like what a stereotypical Yankees fan would look like. Just like an overweight, sloth-looking dude who just looks like he thinks he's the you know what. I almost said the actual word. And like he's got this like New York City scumbag attitude to him. That is 100% what he looked like out there. Like when you think of a Yankees fan, this guy comes to mind. Just like the Yankees cap on, giant nose, chubby, heavy set man in the stands trying to rob foul balls out of people's gloves. Just a stereotypical New York jackbag. All right? That's first. But secondly, the fact that this happened is exactly why people hate Yankees fans, and exactly why they are, without question, the worst fan base. And it's not just Yankees fans, it's New York in general. But why they're the worst fan base out there in terms of sports. Because they are, they have this pompous attitude about them. They always think that their teams are the best, and they're just so spoiled because they live in New York. Like, for nothing else other than that they live in New York, because their teams haven't really won a lot of championships over the last two decades when you really think about it. But they're just spoiled beyond belief. They're a front-runner fan base. And then they do stuff like this, and it's like, no wonder people don't like you. No wonder. I mean, just embarrassing. Embarrassing themselves on national TV in the World Series. You're so desperate that your team is down 3-0. Like, how the mighty have fallen. The mighty and powerful New York Yankees, the evil empire that everybody once feared and was the apparently the greatest franchise in sports history because of all their championships and the stage that they played in at Yankee Stadium and everything that came with the pomp and circumstance of playing in the Bronx and playing in New York and the pinstripes on the jerseys and you're not allowed to have beards. You got to be clean shaven here because we're the New York Yankees. Just, the pompous attitude about everything. And here you are with your fans so desperate because they've seen one title in the last, 20 years that they got to try to pry the ball out of a fielder's mitt so that they can try to help their team out. Like, what the hell is going on? What an embarrassment of an organization and an embarrassment of a fan base to have to do stuff like that. Have to resort to just flat out stealing the ball out of a guy's glove and pulling him up into the stands because you can't deal with the fact that your team's about to get their asses swept tonight. Good riddance to the New York Yankees. But I'm not done with this conversation because we will come back to it a little bit later in the show. Assuming things hold up. The Dodgers are up 2-0 right now, and I am always, always, always down for a little dancing on graves when it comes to the Yankees, or really when it comes to most New York teams, if we're being honest with ourselves. And I said this last round of the playoffs. You guys know by now I'm a Red Sox fan, but I have a soft spot in my heart for the Guardians. And I was loving every minute of that series with you guys, the diehard fans, and me, somebody who covers the team and, you know, follows the team and wants to see them succeed beyond when they play my team. And the one, my time to shine here in Cleveland from a baseball standpoint is when the Guardians play the Yankees. Because we all can come together, sing Kumbaya around an open fire, and just go ham on how much we hate this franchise. And so it's a beautiful opportunity to do that tonight, given what just transpired in the first inning. Just absolutely embarrassing. I mean, come on. This is supposed to be the New York Yankees, and you've resorted to this. This is not the New York Yankees that we once knew. So much for that. One championship in about 25 years. Give me a break. And now they know they're on the brink of losing another one, so they got to try to interfere with the game somehow, the fans. Ridiculous. Again, we'll circle back to this a little bit later in the show, assuming, and I am assuming, but it feels like a comfortable assumption, that the Dodgers hold on and win this game. 216-474-0092 if you want to jump in. We do have Lance Reisland, Cleveland.com, set to join us at 9 o'clock here, coming up in a few minutes. But let's go to the phones. BP and Pepper Pike, you're up on the fan. What's up, BP?
Hey, Spencer, how you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Good, man. I haven't talked to you in a while. And, how about last night? All those New York teams lost. The Giants lost. Of course, the Yankees lost. And then the Knicks lost to us.
Yeah, and the Knicks are supposed to own the Cavs, so it was a pretty good night last night, that's for sure. I'm surprised, given my rant, I'm surprised that Mr. Buckley hasn't called in yet. I don't know if Mr. Buckley's also a Yankees fan. I don't know if he's Yankees or Mets.
Let's assume he's a Yankees fan.
I hope he is, nothing fuels me more than Yankees fans' tears fueling me in the morning. So I'm looking forward to that. No, New York fans are weird, where they're like, if you're a Yankees fan, like they kind of have like lanes you have to stay in because they have two teams for every pro sport in town. Mm-hmm. So I've always heard that it's like if you are a Knicks fan, that means you have to be Yankees, Giants, and Rangers. And if you're a Nets fan, then you're like Nets, Jets, Islanders, and Mets. That's what I've always kind of heard. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that's just kind of what what I've at least seen before from people that I know.
Yeah, I mean, I did go to college on the East Coast, and I was roommates with a guy, and he was a Jets fan and a Mets fan, and a New York Islanders fan, whatever that's worth, and a Knicks fan.
We can sort of find some common ground with Mets fans because they've been tortured for as long as Cleveland has. And if you're a Mets and a Jets fan, we can really find, you know, common ground with you because we know what it's like to be a Browns and – did I lose BP? I don't think I hung up on him, did I? That's my bad, BP. I wanted to hear what you had to say about the Cavs because we were talking about that last segment too, and whether or not Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell are going to fit together this year. I apologize for that. Something happened there. That was weird. 216-474-092 if you want to talk Cavs. But also, if you want to enjoy the Yankees losing so far tonight, we can do that as well. Let's go back to the phones. Mitchell in Cleveland. What's up, Mitchell?
What up, boss? So New York did break a record, and this is an actual record. First time in sports history that this ever happened. The New York Knicks lost, the New York Yankees lost, the New York Giants lost, and the New York Rangers lost. First time in major sports history, 14,
wow,
from the same state lost in the same day.
Do the Giants count if they play in New Jersey? I'm kidding.
I know.
I know everyone makes that joke. I just had to be funny.
I do have a soft spot for the Giants, though. I'm not going to lie to you. Simply because Eli Manning. I like Eli Manning. I like that they was the underdogs against the Patriots. So I have a soft spot for them. Everybody else, I really don't like them.
Well, it is kind of funny with the Giants and the Eli thing because their like calling card was that they were always beating the Patriots, and yeah, the Patriots were obviously the front running NFL team. So I actually feel like the Giants kind of endeared themselves to a lot of outside fans during those couple seasons where they ended up meeting Tom Brady in the Super Bowl because people didn't want to see the Patriots win anymore.
We were tired of the Patriots. We were tired of them winning. We were tired of them cheating. And Eli Manning did the unthinkable, and they was undefeated going into the Super Bowl that one
year.
Yeah,
07. I wasn't bummed that they lost that year, but I did think like it was kind of a win-win no matter what, because it was like if the Giants win, it's a cool story, and you know everyone wants to see nobody wants to see the Patriots win. But it was also, it would have been cool to say like, because I wasn't around when the Dolphins had their undefeated season, it would have been cool to see a team pull off like a 16-0 season and then go win the Super Bowl. But I understand why people didn't want to be the Patriots, though.
And plus, I only felt bad for like one player on that Patriots team, is that was Randy Moss. He had two shots to get it,
dude,
and then get them. They was amazing teams too. So that's it. But yeah,
he is the one.
You said what? I'm sorry.
I said he is the one that like Randy Moss is a guy that deserved a ring at some point. Like that does stink for him that he never got one.
Yeah, well, my son calling me. So
yeah, you're good.
I gotta go.
Appreciate you, Mitchell. Thanks for the call, man. Yeah, I felt bad for Randy Moss with those Patriots teams. That was like the only guy that it was like you felt any sort of sentiments for. Because a player like that with that stature, one of the best of all time to do it. And anybody who watched the Tom Brady roast, like that was at the core of it all. Was like people just kept ripping on Randy Moss for like, how the hell did you play with this guy and you didn't get a ring and he won all of his rings without you around? How does that make any sense? It was kind of wild when you really think about it. 216-474-092 if you want to get in on anything we've talked about so far. I mean, it was nice to enjoy the Yankees losing last night, but also as Mitchell laid out, that the Cavs actually beat the Knicks. I don't know if that'll be the case when they really get rolling, you know, postseason, late in the year. But for that being sort of the first test of a game that you're getting on your schedule, and because here's the thing. Yes, the Knicks are kind of going through some different stuff, and they have a bunch of new faces there, so there's some ironing out that needs to happen. But it's not like the Cavs aren't trying to figure some things out, too, with this new offense and where guys fit in it, and Evan Mobley's taking on more of a role in the offense as well. So it's like, okay, yeah, like there are some things that both these teams are sort of navigating. And because of that, it can't just be, granted, like the Cavs are ironing these things out while playing some really good basketball in the process, and it seems to be going smoothly so far. But while they're trying to iron some things out, like both teams kind of have that excuse because they have a new coach and a new offense and a new system, and they seem to be thriving in it right now. So that was enjoyable. I will always appreciate being able to bask in the disappointment and sadness of Yankees fans. And we will come back to this a little bit later in the show assuming that we get the result that I'm hoping for, and I think all of us are hoping for tonight in the World Series. All right, when we get back, Lance Risland, Cleveland.com, joins us. We'll pick his brain on what he saw from Jameis Winston and other players. And the Browns win on Sunday. We roll on into the 9 o'clock hour. We'll get to Off the Beaten Path coming up, maybe 9:40, but potentially 10 o'clock. It's Spencer German with you. Keep it locked, 92 through the Fan.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.